So we're all very familiar with the killing of George Floyd by a white police officer in Minneapolis. And of course, what that did, it sparked days of protests and riots. It spread over the whole of America. This, on one level, it's been a combination of sort of protests over the last 10 years. But in fact, the problems go back longer than that. But we've had, over the last years, killing of black working class men, mainly, by white police police officers, mainly white police officers over the years. Victimized Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, shot dead. And Eric Garner, who, like George Floyd, was New York's singular chokehold, and he said he couldn't breathe. That's come out of the phrase, "I can't breathe." When he was even a young boy of 12, Tamir Rice. Because there was also Trayvon Martin. He was killed by a neighborhood watchman. Because what marked these protests out from, because that protest was last year, what marked these particular, they seem to engulf the whole of America. This is a surprise to the many, because America is supposed to be a democracy, a more than 21st democracy. Things like that, big disorder, like that scale, almost like an uprising, it doesn't happen in Western democracy, it just happens in dictatorships and third world countries and so forth. But another feature of it, of course, those of a certain age, you know, if you remember back in the 60s, because this is nothing new in America, we had a large scale protest and riots in the 60s over this similar issues for African American. Begun with the 1965, we had the Watts riots there. It's caused by a motorist, black motorist, being arrested by a police officer, highway patrolman. And after the murder of Martin Luther King in 1968, of course, a complete sort of erupted over America, like you've seen now, that National Guard had to be brought in and everything. What makes these protests different from the 60s is that now you've seen a lot of young white people supporting them. So not just black people alone, it's white people, and also got people from Asian background and Hispanic going on the streets and supporting them. So it seems to be like an increasing awareness among other groups, white people, usually young white people, that but with America, there was this issue of police brutality towards black people. But also, it's not just riots, really not just about police brutality and police murder. It's also about disadvantages, social disadvantages that black people face, the barriers, job market, the housing, and so forth. But black people confined to the poor housing, live in sort of ghetto areas, or whereas poor and tend to receive substandard education and don't get the chances in life that maybe other groups do. It's no coincidence that the current phrase of occur at this time, we're in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic and also with the resulting economic crisis. You see, America leads the world and people died of the virus, and also the fact that unemployment's rocketed there as well. It's rising here as well. In America, as they have in the UK, African Americans have borne the brunt of deaths. But almost three times as many Africans have died of the COVID-19 virus as white Americans. This is largely due to the fact that they live in poor housing, more overcrowding areas, live in larger cities, more overcrowding, poor housing, and tend to do jobs, lower paid jobs, which does allow them, makes them more exposed. They have to can't work it from home, they're more exposed to other people. So make it easier to catch the virus. Just a similar situation in the UK where black and ethnic minority people are overrepresented in the deaths of coronavirus, it's the same over here. But same with unemployment. Unemployment rate for African Americans. The beginning of June is about 16.7% of African Americans unemployed, compared to 14% of white American workers. So they're bearing the brunt, not of the COVID idea, but also of the rise in unemployment. It's another feature of this process. They haven't just stayed in the US. They've spread across the globe now. We've had Black Lives Matter protests here in the UK, and in France, Belgium, Germany, everywhere. And it's brought to the fore issues of the black working class disadvantage, issues affecting black people, racism, racial discrimination, police brutality towards black, especially young black people. People here in the UK and other countries are not just protesting in sympathy and solidarity with what's happening in America, but they're also protesting because they find these issues raised where these protests resonate in their own countries, their own place. Like the UK, for example, we too have although not as stark as in America, but you too have a portion out of police, of black working class people dying at the hands of police. Statistics are that although black people makes up 2% of the UK population, they account for 8% of the deaths in police custody. Also, as in the US, black and African people face systemic racial discrimination in jobs and housing elsewhere. Because here, we've had the government's hostile environment, which gave rise to the Rouge scandal, where we've got a lot of elderly black people, older black people who've been in the country for like 30, 40 years, where violence starts to be deported to Jamaica or into the West Indies. Of course, a lot of these protests have moved on from just merely pressing about the death of George Floyd and other black men at the hands of the police to actually removing the symbols of racism, of systemic racism. Like you've seen in Bristol, they pulled down the statue of Edward Colston, a well-known slave trader. Took a statue and rolled it in the ground and threw it into the river. And now there are demands for the removal of the statue of Henry Dundas in Edinburgh, who has been accused for being responsible for the delay in the abolition of slavery. You see it similarly in the US, statues of Confederate generals have been torn down. They really attempted to tear down the statue of Andrew Jackson, former president in Washington, D.C., who was a slave owner. And he's well notorious for expelling thousands of indigenous Americans from Florida, the so-called March of Tears. One of those notorious those were events. You find there's more people reading about it. It's been discussed in the media. You read about it in the BBC, black issues, and books about them being sold out. Of course, you've had also the reaction of politicians, of course, many on the left, especially the Democrats in the US and the Labour Party here. Tried to ride the wave, as it were, tried to sort of assuage the anger of it by attempting to show sympathy with the protesters. You have like leading Democrats in the US Congress taking the knee. And you had Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner taking the knee as well, trying to show solidarity with the protesters. Because what they're trying to do is sewage down where the demonstrators are trying to channel these to safe political ends, this rage. We also see capitalist corporations like you've got Amazon and that get on the act by alleging to endorse the aims of the Black Lives Movement, even though many of them have poor records in hiring and promoting black workers. But, of course, then you have the reaction. Of course, President Trump is fairly predictable. He's trying to rally his base for the forthcoming election by playing the law and order card. He's hoping to achieve the success that Richard Nixon had in 1968 in appealing to the so-called silent majority, to championing them, to say he's championing law and order, he's going to bring over. And also by that posing at the front of the Church of the Bible is trying to appeal to his religious supporters, fundamental religious supporters, and he's on their side. By threatening to bring in the military, he's trying to reassure the capitalist class, and also some fighting workers, that will do what it takes to restore capitalist order. Before I go, I want to say a little bit about the Black Lives Movement, which organized many demonstrations and protests. This was set up back in 2003 in response to the acquittal of Doris Zimmerman, who was a neighborhood watchman who shot dead Trayvon Martin. He was acquitted of murder. And in response, hashtag was set up called on social media called Black Lives Matter. And this formed the basis of a movement. It was established by three women activists. Its aim was to organize marches, demonstrations, protests, wherever where the black people were under threat. They organized so-called freedom rides in Missouri at the time, a year later when Michael Brown was shot dead. They were sort of very organized around what I call chapters. Basis in a sort of very non-hierarchical movement. They claim that we affirm the lives of black, queer, and trans folk, disabled folks, undocumented folks, folks with records, women, and all black lives along the gender spectrum. Our network centers on all those who have been marginalized in black liberation movements. We are working for a world where black lives are no longer systematically targeted for demise. What I mean by black lives, right? It's a very contentious sort of term. People, well, I say, well, what about white people's lives? What do they matter? Why is it just black people's lives? What they mean here is that black lives are undervalued in case of white lives. That black people are fair game by the state and by also vigilante groups and American rights supremacists to be murdered. The way the movement is to reinsert the fact that sort of black people lives matter else. They say elsewhere that it's only when black people lives that all other lives matter. They argue that white people don't face the threats that black people threat in America or in elsewhere in the UK. In fact, J.T. Flowers, an American rapper, described it like this. Imagine houses on fire, someone comes up to you and say, hey, all the houses matter. But your response along that belongs to that, yes, my house isn't on fire. So if all houses matter, your house is on fire, it's fine. Then is it to my status quo when my house is burning down? So that's the way he puts it. So Black Lives, all this started in America. It always talks about supporting black people everywhere, globally, not just in the US, but all over the world where they feel threatened. They aim to be a global movement. It is. We've got Black Lives here in the UK and other countries, Canada and elsewhere. So it's, the idea seems to be a global movement. Also, made the stage for going with the lack of connections word is, if you hear the word white privilege, which is contentious, what people use that term, they don't really mean that. Well, white people are privileged in the conventional sense that white people are rich, are millionaires, have live up high, live lifestyle. What they mean by that is that, you don't have to, white people don't have to face the discrimination and threats to the lives of black people. If you're white, you don't have to worry about a policeman coming and killing you, or a white, or a vigilante coming to kill you. You don't face discrimination in the marketplace or housing, whatever, that black people do. So, according to that, if you're a white person, it's dead poor. You don't have the prospects in life. You're at the bottom of the scrap heap. You're still privileged because you don't have these problems that black people have. These threats. Okay. Now, after these demonstrations, after disaster, does this really mean that race is now the defining issue of our times? That either can forget about class, or class has to take a second break. We've got to deal with the racial issue, perhaps deal with class later on, or maybe don't need to deal with race. That's a race issue. The answer is categorically no, that's not the case. In fact, race, far from being a separate issue from class, is actually bound up with class and capitalism. To look at the development of capitalism in history, three main aims that propelled capitalism to being a global system that it is today. If we go back to the early days, they had the discovery of the Americas. With that, we had the brutal destruction of the indigenous peoples, communities and lifestyles, the so-called indigenous peoples' communities, and the dispossession of their lands, throwing them off the lands. And this resulted in the Indian, so-called Indian Wars. I mean, that's what they called them at the time. And they fought Indians for their lands and eventually won and subjugated them. So the taking the land, they were able to accumulate capital. And also, with the defeated or subjugated in the native peoples, indigenous people, they made them as slaves on the plantations. They're the first slaves on the plantations in America, which produced things like cotton and other products that they'd export to Europe, which then fueled the Industrial Revolution. They're the first ones. And they were replaced later on by slaves imported from Africa. So you can see how slavery, the slave system, plantation system, fueled the Industrial Revolution, helped to expand, accumulate capital. Then you had the European colonization of Asia and Africa, where the Western powers plundered the resources of the people there and ruthlessly exploited the people. And also the benefit, of course, of capitalism again, of building up capitalist communication. Now, to justify all these human acts, of course, they developed a sort of racist ideologies, the idea of superior, that the subjects, the slaves in America, also subjects in the colonies were also subhuman. They were inferior to the white race. And so white race was to civilize these people, the so-called white man's burden. So you see how, see this history produce this sort of racial edifice that we have at the moment. You see how working class, white working class, have been viewed as these ideas. Of course, it would affect those in uniform as well, the police. that's one thing. But even if we were to reform camps, say we were to implement all the demands of the Black Lives Movement and Black people achieve, Black and ethnic minorities achieve full equality in capitalism, which is quite difficult, which debatable anyway. But say you could do that, and you still have problems of class division and self-capitalism with the Richmond or the Richmond area and a poor majority. Or you still have poverty and capitalism, so that you might have a redistribution probably more. But a few Black people in poverty, but they'll still be there. You still have the class divisions. You may have a bigger Black middle class, but they themselves are, their lives also circumscribed by the market system. So it may improve a lot of Black people, wouldn't free them as such, wouldn't feel about it. It's very unlikely you could have a completely non-racial capitalism, because remember that capitalism's the way it's organized by, it's divided into different competing nation states. Now, it's endemic that have trade disputes with other nation states. And likely that more than often not, they will have to go to war with other countries. And to do that, you have to motivate sectionally working class to go and fight your wars for them. And to do that, mobilize working class, you have to feed them propaganda about the other side. You have to motivate them to kill workers from other countries. So you need a sort of, at least a xenophobic ideology. So it leads necessarily to xenophobia, and it leads on to racism. Seem very difficult, very likely to do that. It's really the world of racism that's really built into the system more ways than one. What we say for free Black workers and white workers, we need to organize together. Right? And it was not be divided by race, but we have to come together, see our common class interests against global capitalism. You can't form either our national lines or lines of ethnicity alone. You've got to form it globally through organizing a revolution, which would then we do it democratically and for the world consciously to take up political power consciously and dispossess the capitalist class and establish common ownership, where we get rid of nation states, get rid of capitalist private property, abolish the money system, means of exchange, and then have a world of common ownership. I'll send to that. That's what I'll finish there. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.